Hear NFL legends, players, coaches, and media members from around the country sharing their insights and stories with us year-round. Here on Thursday night, Tailgate.
And now joining us on Thursday night tailgate is Detroit Tigers legendary pitcher Denny McClain. Let me remind you about Denny's background. He is from Markham, Illinois, which is just a little south of Chicago. He was signed out of high school in 1962 by the Chicago White Sox as an amateur free agent. In his minor league debut, he threw a no-hitter against the Salem Rebels, striking out 16. Back in the early 60s, players with 1 year of service who weren't brought up to the major leagues were subject to a new draft, essentially kind of like the Rule 5 draft now, and they would become draftees and free agents. So the Detroit Tigers selected Denny off waivers, if you will, in April of 1963, and he made his major league debut on September 21st, 1963, against the White Sox, which we'll talk about here in a minute. After spending a couple of seasons down in the minors, he was recalled in 1965 and set a major league record for relief pitchers when he struck out 7 consecutive batters after coming in the first inning of relief of Tigers starter Dave Wickersham. Fast forward to 1968 when he started a league-high 41 games and finished a remarkable 28 of them. He became the last pitcher to win 30 or more games in a season, and won the Cy Young Award and MVP Award in 1968 with a 31-6 record and a 1.96 ERA. He would go on to win the Cy Young Award again the following year in 69 when he led the league again in wins with 24. In all, he pitched in the major leagues from 63 to 1972, amassed 131-91 record and an ERA of 3.39. He started 264 games and completed an unbelievable 105 of them, and we are honored that he is with us tonight here on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Denny, Chris and Bob here. Thanks for coming on the show.
Hi, Denny.
Chris and Bob, thank you very much. Thanks for the invitation.
So, Denny, I want to start by going back to your time with the White Sox. Did you grow, from just south of Chicago, did you grow up a White Sox or a Cubs fan, and was signing with the White Sox kind of a dream come true?
Well, let me make this as clear as I can. I hated the White Sox to begin with. I was always a Cub fan. You couldn't even mention the word White Sox in my home. My father would chop your head off if you mentioned the word White Sox. And when there were three clubs that came out to sign me. One was the Yankees. One was the Milwaukee Brewers, Milwaukee Braves then, and then, of course, the White Sox. And the White Sox came equipped with a check for $17,000 and said, we got $17,000 for you. And as they walked out of the house, my mother said, we're signing with the White Sox. My dad had passed away. And my mother said, we're signing with the White Sox. I said, no, I want to play with the Yankees. They had the same amount of money. She said, didn't you see his shoes? The Yankee guy, the Yankee scout, had a hole in the bottom of his shoes, and his shoes weren't shined. I said, what the hell has that got to do with me playing with the Yankees? She says, if they can't have a new pair of shoes on their scout, you think the check is any good? I said, oh, mom. So that's how the hell I got with the White Sox. And then 6 months later, Al Lopez, who then was called the senior, the dean of managers in the world, just pitched 9 perfect innings down in Mexico City. And I thought I was on my way. I mean, I was only 19, and I just had the first spring training I'd ever been in, and I had a great spring training. And lo and behold, Lopez called me up to the front of the airplane and said, listen, I got some good and bad news for you. He says, I have to get rid of either you or one of the other pitchers who got me over, Bruce Howard. And I said, why? He says, guy, this rule that you guys just talked about, we can only keep so many guys who are on the major league roster, and I'm not going to keep both of you. So what we're going to do Saturday morning at 10 o'clock, you guys are going to pitch against each other, and the guy who loses is going on waivers. And I'm thinking, boy, this is a hell of a thing. And he says, let me be real honest with you, Denny. He says, I don't think you'll ever be a major league pitcher. You don't have a curveball. You don't have a slider. You don't have a changeup. All you've got is a great fastball. But he says, the big leagues can hit that fastball. So here I am, 19 years old. I'm ready to jump out of the airplane at 40,000 feet at about that time. And so on Saturday morning at 10 o'clock, I'm the home team, and I throw the first pitch of the ball game to a guy named Dave Nicholson, who hit monster home runs. I mean, hit monster shots. First pitch I throw is right down the middle of the plate where it shouldn't be, and he hits it 14 miles. It wound up, and Daytona, I think, from Lakeland. And so I get the long and short of the story is I get beat 1-0. 20 minutes after the game is over, Lopez comes to me and says, "We're putting you on waivers." He says, "If they have put you on already," he says, "I think somebody's going to pick you up." He says, "Detroit's called here a couple of times today wanting to know if you're a winner or loser." So he says, I expect them to be the club." So about 2 hours later, the chief scout for the Detroit Tigers drove up in a great big black Cadillac and said, "Denny McClain, you're with us. Let's go to Tiger Town." And as they say, the rest is history.
So, you know, to your point about the rest of this history, you make your major league debut, right, against the White Sox. You know, like you said, you're 19 years old. You pitch a complete game. You allow one earned run. You struck out eight. You pick two guys off. You hit a home run.
I did.
Share that story.
The home run is just everybody tells me I hit a home run because I obviously was in a deep fog as soon as I hit the ball because I don't remember the home run. I probably ran around the bases quicker than O.J. Simpson ran from goal line to goal line. I mean, I was that much awed to begin with. And so we win the ball game, as you said. And after the ball game, Charlie Dressen was our manager, who was one of the great iconic managers of all time. Managed the Dodgers, the Giants. I mean, he managed a whole bunch of ball clubs. And Charlie said to me, he says, "Come on, I want to take a walk with you." This is right after the game, 15 minutes. He grabbed me by the hand, and Charlie was only about 5'2", and here I am about 6 foot tall. And it looked like the pumpkin in the bumpkin walking down the middle of Tiger Stadium. And Charlie says, "Come on, I want you to meet somebody." And he walks me right down the visitor's dugout, and there's Al Lopez on the other side of the dugout doing a TV show or a radio show. And Al Lopez sticks out his hand and says, "Hi, Denny, good to see you again." And Charlie says, "If you shake his hand, I'll release you today." He says, "He's a jerk." And next thing I know, I said, Mr. Lopez, it's good to see you." He says, "Apparently not." I said, "Well, it's not as much fun as it could have been." I said, "But that's okay." I said, "By the way, Mr. Lopez," I said, "I've always been a Cub fan, so my feelings weren't even hurt." I said, "It's okay." So that's the way we started off. But that's and every time I pitch against the White Sox, it was something special, especially when I pitched in Chicago.
And Denny, was it planned for you to face the White Sox as the first team that you would get your first start against, or was it just coincidence? It just happened to work out like that?
Well, I think it was a little bit of both, but I knew about a week before that I was going to pitch against the White Sox. They had told me, he says, if the starting rotation stays the way it is and we don't get any rain, you'll start on Saturday. And, hell, I didn't even know who we were playing yet that weekend. And then later on, I don't know if it was that night or the next day, Dressen came up to me and says, "Oh, by the way, do you know who we're playing Saturday?" I says, "I do now." I said, "The White Sox." I said, "Well, thanks a million, Charlie. I won't sleep now till Sunday." So so they let me go out there. And the thing about the pickoffs, I picked two guys off that day. I don't know if I ever picked another guy off in my whole career. I don't remember picking anybody else off, but those were two badly needed pickoffs that day.
Bob, questions for Denny?
Denny, it's great to speak with you again. It's been a few years. We had you on the TV show side a few years back.
We
just ended that 10-year run of that TV show, Lenny.
And I
got to tell
you,
that was one of the you were one of our favorite guests, and it remains one of the better interviews we had still posted on YouTube. So we thank you for that. But it's great to speak with you again. And
I
want to ask you about that 65 season, Denny, when you really, really came into your own. You got your feet wet in 64, starting 19, 20 games or so. But going into 65, spring training, you were still 20 years old, Denny. Did you have any idea that you would start 33 games, pitch over 200 innings, and become an integral part of that staff?
I didn't until that magical night, the night I went out there. I was pulled in from the bullpen. I mean, I was on the bubble. I mean, I literally was on the bubble the night I finally got a chance. I relieved Dave Wickersham, as you alluded to, and struck out 7 in a row. And I'll tell you, between you, me, and God, and the angels in heaven, I actually struck out 8. The umpire later admitted that he missed the 8th guy. But that's okay. What the hell? It's been a long time now, but, when I pitched that night, it just was one of those nights. The weather was perfect. The humidity, you know, it was one of those moments. And but for some reason, everything kicked in that night. And for the first time in my major league career, as short as it was, I was throwing the ball the way I threw the ball when I was in high school. When I was in the minor leagues for a short time, like up at Duluth, Minnesota, I played that year. So there were all kinds of the year before. So there are all kinds of crazy things that were going on. And I felt myself getting stronger. And I think one of the reasons why I got stronger, and you don't see this anymore, is that pitchers aren't allowed to throw a lot anymore. And I used to throw every day. I used to throw every day, 6, 7, 8 minutes. And if I had a day off, if I was going to be the fourth starter or the fifth or sixth starter in a week, then I would take one day and I would pitch for 35 or 40 minutes between starts. So I think I just got stronger from the repetition, like working out with weights. I just got stronger and stronger. My worst problem was I didn't have a curve. I literally didn't really have a good curveball. It was barely a curveball. I had a little bit of a slider, a breaking ball, and I had a real good changeup. So I actually had a fastball and a changeup for the first year I played up there. And I think at 65, I think I won 16 games with just a fastball and a changeup. And before we traded Frank Larry, I think it was 64. And Frank Larry, who just died, by the way, a couple of days ago, was known as the Yankee Killer. He used to beat the Yankees every time he walked out there. And in spring training that year, Frank sat me down and said, "Listen, you got a great fastball." He says, you're 19 years old. You throw strikes." He says, "I can't believe that you can throw 30 strikes in a row. Nobody does that." He says, "In third," he said, "I'm going to show you how to throw a curveball. I'm going to show you the easiest curveball there is in the world." Well, you know, if you're 19, 20 years old and you still haven't been able to throw a curveball, the easiest one in the world is not make a lot of sense to me. So I will tell you this. Within 15 minutes, he had me throwing a curveball. And, of course, I almost broke my elbow the way he had me throwing it. But he made some adjustments with my grip and what have you. And then in 65, I started throwing it more and more in the bullpen, not during a game. I still relied upon, you know, you'll hear the old story. You go home with the girl you took to the dance. And I just, every time I got in trouble, I went to my one pitch fastball. If I got behind 2-0, 3-1, I'd throw a changeup. So that's that was the basic structure that I had from Charlie Dressen and Mike Rourke, who was also one of our coaches there. So they gave me good structure. They gave me good things to think about. And then the greatest thing in the world that happened to me, number one, I'm playing with a good ball club. Never, ever lose sight of that. I mean, I got freehand at home plate. I got Cash at first base. I got McCullough at second. I got Euler at short. I've got Kaline in right field, Willie Horton, Gates Brown, Jimmy Northup, and Mickey Stanley playing. So we had 7 all-stars in our lineup eventually. And the best thing that happened to me, Johnny Sane wound up being our pitching coach. And Johnny worked with me just day in and day out and said, "I just can't believe that you're not going to win 35 ball games one day." And, you know, everybody jokes with everybody. And so in 68, when that year started to unroll, Johnny said at the break, he said, "You going to win 30? I said, "No, I think I'm going to win more than that." Just joking. I mean, I wasn't serious about it at all. And Ray Euler, who was my roommate, said, "Yeah, he says, believe me, he's going to win 30. Next thing we know, we're winning 31 ballgames, winning the pennant, the World Series, and what a year that was.
Sure was, Denny. And again, 28 complete games that year. You had 5 years in a row with double-digit complete games. And I was the game has changed so much, it's almost impossible to compare. But did you ever, in that stretch, Denny, from say 65 to 70, hear a manager or a pitching coach mention the number of pitches you had thrown or will throw?
Yeah, you know what? And not the number of pitches. This is the way they counted. Taking you out of the ballgame had nothing to do with the number of pitches. If you were a low ball pitcher, and by the fifth, sixth, or seventh inning, they started watching you very, very closely if the ball was coming up. The ball was coming up, they were going to have one or two guys in the bullpen warming up. I was a high ball pitcher, so when I would get in trouble is when I would start to pitch down. All of a sudden, I thought I was Dombrowski, for God's sakes, the right-handed relief pitcher with the Baltimore Orioles for years. And I was not a low-ball pitcher by anybody's imagination. And that's when I get into a little bit of trouble. But as long as I kept the ball up with that big curveball that I had, and eventually the slider, things went pretty well. But the complete game thing is got to do with pitches. And I will tell you one game that I pitched in 68, I think it was 68, I threw 253 pitches, 253, and won the ball game 7-3. Believe it or not,
wow.
Pitched 9 innings. And, I don't know if my arm ever was back in the socket the way it should have been, but that started kind of a little bit of a pain in elbow and shoulder trouble with my rotator cuff. But the bottom line was that's what we were told to do. We were told to go out and pitch 9 innings. As long as we were winning, they were going to leave you in the ballgame. The instruction then versus now was so much better. You pitched a lot. And the other thing that the game has really changed, and I think you all recognize this, in the minor leagues, you don't spend any time there anymore. If you can throw the ball at 90, 95 miles an hour, you're getting a shot in the big leagues right away. You're in Albuquerque one day, the next day you're in Kansas City or Chicago, wherever it might be, and you're not getting the opportunity to perfect your skills. You're not learning how to throw a good curveball. And the worst part about it, guys, is they don't learn how to pitch. The golden rule is, if you're ahead of a hitter, you go get them. You go get them hard with your best stuff. If you're behind a hitter, you throw something off speed. If you're 1-0, 2-0, 3-1, changeups are the greatest pitch in the world. Greatest, because everybody sits back on a 1-0 count, 2-0 count, 3-1 count, and they all believe that, man, you're going to try to throw a fastball by him. And pitching is not about trying to throw a ball by anybody. And today, I think you would admit that we got so many guys who want to throw the ball by people. And the other thing that bothers me a lot is the number of strikeouts. Because everybody tells me, and I do not believe you can compare eras, but these hitters in this era that we're playing with right now and the pitching, I'd love to see Kaline and Freehand and Mantle and Maris and all these guys play against this pitching. I'm telling you, I don't think 65 home runs, 70 home runs would be a whole lot of home runs with those guys. That's how good a hitter they were. They were guys that played in the minor leagues for a while. They perfected their product. They knew how to play the game. And the other thing was fundamentally, all the teams knew how to play. Hell, we used to hit a cutoff man once in a while. We'd bunt once in a while. We'd do a hit and run or a run and hit. We'd pick a guy off. Well, I didn't pick many off, but the bottom line simply was we played the game, and that was more important than some of the bigger stuff. The guy would hit, grand slam home run that one day. And the bottom line simply is the game was played at a much better pace, and I can prove it. Most of our games are 2 hours, 2 hours and 15, 20 minutes. Now, doesn't that tell you our pitchers were throwing that many more strikes?
Right.
I mean, just think about
Denny,
it. I used to tell Jimmy Leland one thing. I said, you got the toughest job in baseball. He said, what do you mean? I said, you and every other manager, before you go out every night, you got to figure out what four pitchers are you using tonight. He says, I never thought it that way, but you're right. He said, I do. He said, I make a list of four people every night. And I said, hell, you only got 11 guys. Jimmy was never too smart with the math.
Well, Denny, I mean, there's a ton of questions that Bob and I would love to ask you. Unfortunately, we just don't have enough time. We hope you'll come back
and
join us again sometime. This has been a huge treat.
You call me anytime you want. I'm working a lot, but you know what? I enjoy this, and I enjoy you guys, and my very best to you and your audience, and see you around the corner.
We appreciate it, Denny.
We appreciate that, Denny. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays to you and your family.
Same to you and all your fans out there. Have a great week.
Talk
Bye-bye.
Soon. Take care.
Thanks. You too, Denny. That is the legendary Tigers pitcher, Denny McLain. Oh, geez, Bob. I mean, the guy's got, I'm sure, a million great stories. And unfortunately, just not enough time to get to a lot of them. But, boy, you want to talk about a guy who was dominant in the late 60s. And, again, last pitcher to win, 30 or more games. And, one of the things I wanted to get to, we just didn't have time, was when he won his 30th game on September 14th, 1968, Dizzy Dean, who was the last guy – to win 30 games, and that was all the way back in 1934, was on hand to congratulate him. Boy, that would have been a great story to hear. Hopefully we get to have Denny back on the show again real soon.
Chris, he's a fascinating guy. When I first talked to him a few years back, it was one of the interviews I would never forget. I was able to do a half hour with him, I believe, and we still hadn't scratched the surface just because of the numbers he put up. I think I was in third grade when all that was happening in 1968, and people forget that 31-6 that year, Chris, he followed it up with 24 wins the next year and even more shutouts. And the numbers were incredible. And he'll tell you the next time we talk about the fun these guys had in the clubhouse. Gates Brown was a character. We had talked to him weeks before we had talked to Denny. Mickey Lolich riding to the park on a motorcycle. Denny playing the organ in the clubhouse. It was a loose bunch of guys, Chris, but they could play. And we'll save a lot for our audience because it's truly an honor and special. Very special when we talk to such a guy like McLean. He is a legend.